Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Wednesday, and every Wednesday at 9:30. We chat with our man John McClain from Houston, the legend. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. I noticed yesterday you had an interview, I think, with Jeff Fisher. Was it yesterday? I saw it.
Yep.
And I tweeted it, and how'd that go? How's Jeff doing?
Oh, Jeff's doing great. He was in here with us for an hour. He's working with as an advisor with the new arena team that we have in town, the Nashville Cats, the third iteration of the Nashville Cats. So he's a part of that. But it was a blast telling stories and kind of giving his thoughts on the Super Bowl and things going on right now. So it was good to see him and catch up with him.
That's very wise of the Cats to reach out to Jeff. Everything he went through here and then the move to there. And if you got time for Jeff Fisher's story, I got a million of them. But the one I think is the most interesting was when I met Jeff and I was covering the Pro Bowl. I was fortunate enough, the Chronicle sent me the Pro Bowl 12 years in a row. That was a tough assignment going over there for about 10 days. But my boss told me it was after the 92 playoffs when they blew the 35-3 lead at Buffalo in a wild card game. Lost 41-38 in overtime. So everybody talked after the game. They were like shell-shocked. Then they just disappeared. So my boss said he wanted to go to the Pro Bowl, and nine of these guys are in it because they were a really good team, and see what they say now that they've had, you know, a month or like 3 weeks away. And so I said, sure. That wasn't a hard sell to go to Wayne. So I went, and they were great. I ended up going 12 years in a row. Because the boss says, as long as you can produce the stories, we'll keep sending you. So finally, all the other writers complained so much about me going and them not getting to go someplace like that, they pull the plug. But Jeff was coaching with the 49ers, and they had lost a championship game, so they were over there. And Jeff is had coached with Buddy Ryan, and Buddy was here in 93, And I heard that he was interviewing for the Cardinals head coaching job, and I heard it like midnight Central Time. So I called Floyd Reese, and he was the GM. And I said, did you give permission for Buddy Ryan to interview at Arizona? And he said, yes. And I said, okay, I'm going to write it. Got just enough time to get in the deadline. And so I hung up, and then I thought, there's only one guy in the NFL who knows Buddy's defense, and they got to get a defensive coordinator in there because he wants to be head coach, and if Arizona offers it, he's gone. And that one guy was Jeff Fisher, who was a 49ers assistant. So I knew they were coaching, and I called his room, and he wasn't there. Talked, usually left a message. He called me back, and they had a guy that covered the 49ers, who used to be a beat writer here, who I went against with the Houston Post for a few years. And so he covered the Niners. So Jeff called me back. I introduced myself, and I said, I wanted to talk to you about Buddy Ryan. I think's going to leave the Oilers, and you would be the ideal replacement. I said, but Richard Weiner covers you guys for, can't remember what paper, and I got to make sure you're not going to tell him. And he said, well, he said, if you and I are going to work together, you're going to learn that I have integrity. And if I tell you I'm not going to talk to anybody, I won't. I said, well, that's good enough for me. So that's how I met Jeff. Told him I thought that they were going to come after him for the job. So be prepared. They did. They hired him, and covering him was one of the best experiences of what is now my 47th year of covering the NFL.
Oh, that's awesome. So when he was in here, it's easy with him to just naturally go down rabbit holes and telling stories and stuff. And we looked at him and I said, when did you, because Floyd had told me the story of when he knew, okay, Jeff is the guy, you know, after the interim, and like knew he was the guy. And so
There was no interim. They didn't give him that title. And the interviews of others were shams.
Yeah,
they were going to hire Jeff all along, but they had to go through this rigmarole of interviewing other people But Floyd liked Jeff so much. It was such a natural thing to make him the coach. But anyway, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. So this was we're going to play this from yesterday because we asked him, like, when he kind of knew, and, of course, your name came up. So this is what he said.
We just kind of kicked things around. You know, yeah. Floyd and I did, you know, in the afternoons and, you know, for probably 10 days. And then John McClain, of all people, calls me and he goes, "Hey, I was just checking in and they're getting ready for a press conference. They're going to announce that you're the head coach." And I go, "You think?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, it's a done deal." I go, "Oh, okay." And then about a half hour later, I got a call.
And then we
went for that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's the ultimate scoop. John was the ultimate scoop.
There you go. How about that, John?
Yeah, I did. When Jeff got there and I started doing charities for Charles Davis Foundation, which was put together by George Plaster, and Jeff did it every year with me. I think it was like 12 years. And then when he went the first year with the Rams, he came back and I said, "Look, I'm not going to ask you to do the charity again." But I've never seen a head coach do more charities, even ones people didn't get. He didn't want credit for it. You know, he never publicized them, but the charity work he did in Nashville was more than I've ever seen anybody ever do. And I'm sure he did the same thing in St. Louis and L.A., but he was so entrenched there in the community and so popular. If you got Jeff Fisher to do a charity with you, you know it was gonna go over like gangbusters.
We're talking to the great John McClain. John, is it? I know you've covered Super Bowl, but is it kind of I'm gonna say hurtful? But is it just? Wouldn't it be great to have covered it for Houston? Wouldn't that have been a lot of fun?
Oh yeah, the closest. I've never given up on that. And the closest I ever came was when the Titans went after the '99 season because so many people in the organization had been here, and I covered them here. Guys like Jeff and a lot of his coaches and Steve McNair and Eddie George and Frank Reichcheck and Bruce Matthews and Blaine Bishop and all those guys. So it was as close as I've ever come. And I felt terrible for them when they came up a yard short. And in fact, I watched the NFL Network the other day, did all these Super Bowls condensed down to 30 minutes, and I taped like 10 of them. I'd covered them all, but I wanted to see them again, and that one was prominent. And I thought, maybe this time Dyson will get his arm across the goal line.
Well,
you know what? He didn't, but I thought it. Bruce Matthews told me once that when the Buffalo playoff loss after 92 season is on, he always watches it, hoping that if he watches it enough, the ending will be different.
What was the first Super Bowl you ever covered?
Let me think a minute. Oakland and Philadelphia in New Orleans, and that was one where Dick Vermeil had his players all tightened up with curfews and everything, and John Madden let the Raiders, as long as they worked, when work was over, they do what they want. They were out on Bourbon Street. They were partying like crazy. John Matuszak, who was 6'9", wild man, he couldn't hide anywhere, and he didn't try it. Him and Lyle Alzado, two of the craziest guys in history, and then they beat the hell out of the Eagles. A lot of people started to rethink how they approached the Super Bowl. And I just was asked by a Talk of Fame Network column coming out today about, they asked a panel of Hall of Fame, of us on Hall of Fame Selection Committee, our most memorable Super Bowl. Well, my most memorable was here, 28-3 Atlanta, with Dan Quinn as the head coach, Kyle Shanahan as offensive coordinator, getting the Patriots down. We all thought Atlanta's going to win. Belichick and the Patriots will lose. And the fact that it was in NRG Stadium, biggest comeback in Super Bowl history, overtime. Brady was magnificent, incredible catches by Julian Edelman and Julio Jones. And to me, that was most memorable because I covered the biggest comeback in NFL history, 35-3 midway through the third quarter. It's not anymore. And then I covered the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history. Bruce Matthews had to suffer through both because he played in the first one and his son Jake was the left tackle for the second one.
That's right. Oh, wow. We'll have more with John coming up next, including more on the Super Bowl and the news around the NFL. We'll do that next here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game here on this Wednesday. Continuing our conversation with John McClain as the Super Bowl is here. And, you know, obviously all the interviews going down. But when you look at this game, John, you know, obviously Patrick Mahomes already has two rings. He's done his thing. But how much pressure is on Brock Purdy going into this game to, you know, not necessarily prove the naysayers wrong, but, you know, obviously to win the game and get San Francisco over that hump that they haven't been able to do with Kyle Shanahan?
Well, we were in the break. All these Jeff Fisher stories just came flooding back. And it's amazing. Y'all ever wanted to devote a whole show to Jeff Fisher stories, let me know.
Oh, we can do that.
Brock Purdy is, it's a mismatch of the quarterbacks, and everybody knows it. If he loses, it's no big deal. It's his second year in the NFL. He's got plenty of time. Peter King did a statistical comparison, including wins and losses, with however many games he has started, say his 21, I can't remember, to Joe Montana's first 21 when he became the regular starter, which was not his rookie year, and Steve Young. Steve had come from USFL, Los Angeles Express. He sat around behind Joe Montana, and so he waited till he became a full-time starter. And Purdy blows both of them away. And he's got a lot of talent around him, but he doesn't have Jerry Rice. So he's off to a great start. Look how long it took Peyton Manning to get to a Super Bowl, much less win a Super Bowl. So I don't think there's any more pressure on him. Patrick Mahomes, if cementing his legacy as one of the all-time greats who's won multiple Super Bowls, he needs to win again. If his goal is to try to catch Tom Brady, he's under pressure to win again. I can't believe the Chiefs are underdogs. I would never bet against, if I were betting, which I don't, I would bet on Mahomes and that defense and Andy Reid as them having those advantages. But Purdy is such a rock. I've read a bunch of stories people have done on him. And it's just he came the hard way. I watched him at Iowa State because they were in the Big 12, and I watched him play Baylor. And I thought, man, this guy, if he gets drafted, will be a practice squad, might get up to be a third quarterback. And then he dropped into the perfect coach, perfect offense, perfect playmakers, and then he had to play, and he's been tremendous. So if he wins it, boy, then people are going to start saying he's great. I don't think he's great yet. I think Patrick Mahomes is great.
John, with Andy Reid, what a great story. I mean, he had the success in Philadelphia, never quite got the Super Bowl win. He got him to a Super Bowl, but kind of, it's not so much of a redemption with him with the Chiefs, but you know him, and just discuss a little bit about how this run with the Chiefs has kind of fortified him. I know the Super Bowl wins help, has one of the best coaches of all time.
Well, first of all, Joe, he was at Philadelphia. He was looked at as a really good coach, a great guy. Everybody loved him, a guy that had clock management issues and game management issues, and he would get so defensive when people would ask him about it. But it was a fact. And then he traded up to get Patrick Mahomes, and all of a sudden he became a great coach. It's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you want to be a great coach, you got to have a great quarterback. Look what happened to Bill Belichick. He was not a great coach before Brady. He has not been a great coach after. But Andy Reid has done it with two organizations, went to a Super Bowl with Philadelphia. And all this talk about him possibly retiring, I think I told you guys, I think that's media and fan manufactured. I don't see him walking away. And I said, what would Andy do? Play golf, play tennis, eat cheeseburgers full time? You know, Andy's a football coach. Coaches want to coach. They get retired. You know, they don't retire on their own. They get retired by their owner or their AD or something like that. But not many walk away like Nick Saban did when they're not shown the door. And I'd expect Andy Reid to be coaching. You know, everybody wants to coach into their 70s now. He may have another good 5, 6, 7 years because he'll be a Super Bowl contender every year with a guy he's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever.
Agreed. John, who's got the more pressure this weekend, the 49ers or the Chiefs?
Oh, the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan, they blew that lead 28-3 when he was offensive coordinator in Atlanta. He, you know, he thought he was going to beat the Chiefs. They blew a 10-point lead. Last year they were blowing and going, lost all their quarterbacks. And so this is him getting to the – he needs to win a Super Bowl because Kyle is a great coach. But to be recognized as such, you got to win a Super Bowl. And it would be a big deal for his family, of course, because his dad's got two. So they're favored. You know, people are expecting them to win. But, man, I would not pick against the Chiefs.
John McClain is with us from Houston. You know, the fallout continues with, you know, the Titans and Brian Callahan and the discussion of Mike Vrabel didn't get a job. Dan Quinn goes to Washington, gets the last open job. So do you think that Vrabel just now takes a year off, doesn't go the coordinator route, and then would probably be the hot name next year once that cycle starts?
Well, he might be one of the hot names, and I think Michael sit out a year, enjoy being with his family. If I were the networks, I'd want Michael on my studio show because, as you guys know, he can be very entertaining as well as informative. I don't think Mike's going to disappear from the NFL. And one of the things when you're a head coach and you're not working and you want to be a coach, you need to stay out there, I think. And that thing about Vrabel intimidating people, that's one of the dumbest things I have ever heard.
I know.
And I mean, in fact, when I get off with you guys, I'm going to text him and I'm going to say, well, you sure as hell intimidate me. And the first person, when I got laid off last week, the first person who texted me to tell me how bad he felt for me was Vrabel, which is one of the reasons I like Vrabel. And by the way, Callahan getting his dad to come there, I know you guys know this, but that is a huge, huge move because if you don't have a really good offensive line coach, and they got a great one, you're in trouble, especially when you know they're going to invest more in the offensive line. That's probably one of the things Bill Callahan wanted to know. So that'd be great for the offensive line, great for the offense, and great for his son.
Well, and here's the other part of that, too, and Jeff Fisher was talking about that yesterday. Of the other part is because you're bringing in two rookie coordinators, and I know Brian's going to call the plays and basically be the offensive coordinator, but to have a former head coach – on your staff that's also your dad that can kind of help navigate him through some of those decisions that, you know, he's not used to making. And, you know, some you're just going to have to do his feel, but how big that is to have Bill Callahan, who's been in those positions before as a head coach, to lean on.
Well, the problem for Brian is dad can ground him or send him to timeouts, you know, if he doesn't like what he's doing. And that, I think with Bill, it's not just having your dad. It's having your dad who's been great at what he did. He wasn't a great head coach, but he's a great line coach. What he did in Cleveland with what he had to work with was fantastic. And I just can't overemphasize how important that is. And any other new coach on that staff, I thought the Texans needed a former head coach on the staff. They talked to Cliff Kingsbury. They talked to Gary Kubiak. Kubiak wasn't interested. And so they went with a rookie head coach, rookie offensive coordinator, rookie play caller, rookie quarterback coach, and a rookie quarterback. So it can be done. And they had some other experienced guys on the staff, but not a head coach. So it's just invaluable for the two of them to be together because he knows that his dad's going to tell him exactly what he thinks. He's not going to sugarcoat it. He's not going to tell him what he wants to hear because he's worried about, you know, losing his job or something like that. So I just think it was a tremendous move. And, of course, it was a class thing for the Browns to do.
Yeah.
Because they were not going to stand in the way. And they lost a hell of a coach.
Oh, they did. And I'll be curious to see what they do to replace him. John, appreciate it as always. You are the best, and look forward to recapping the Super Bowl with you next week.
I do too, guys. Thank you very much. And when you talk to Jeff, tell him I said hello.
I will, for sure. John McClain joining us from Houston. He is the best. I do want to talk about you know, the Vrabel, I guess he's big, and so that's intimidating, and
yeah.
that's why he's not a head coach. Like, we haven't touched on that yet. We'll do that and much more coming up next in the second hour here on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.